You are listening to The Klatch on Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, here on lovely Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Linda Nygaard, and with me in the studio today are Susan McCabe and Emily Scott. Hi, Emily.
Hello, Linda. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to The Klatch.
Thank you for having me.
It's glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you, too.
Emily's come to us today for some pretty exciting news that she has, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about all of her Vashon Mori Food Bank news and mm-hmm. organizational challenges, maybe, and interesting tidbits that she has
for us.
Did
we say who Emily actually is?
Yes, Emily, what is your real title at the food bank?
Well, I'm a lover of unicorns and sparkles.
Yes, we know that.
Aside from that, roller skating. And I also happen to be the executive director up at
the Vashon
Food
Bank. That's what I thought. I didn't know if it was executive or if it was director, but
it's a title. What's
well,
her name?
Well, I first knew Emily when you were doing warehouse stuff, I think.
I was managing the volunteer program.
Is that what it was? Yeah. And I volunteered there for mm-hmm. a while, and that was really fun, and mm-hmm. I'm going to do it again pretty soon. But it was good. So we're going to have some good news and some fun chat a little bit later in the show.
I'm excited.
Yeah, it'll be good. For now, let's just do a little check-in. Susan, how are you?
I am fine.
Have you been doing anything exciting lately?
No, not exactly. You know, just moving furniture and planting mm-hmm. things in the yard, and thrilled at the fact that we have daylight savings time and I get more time at night to be outdoors in the yard.
Wasn't it something last night when it was 7 o'clock
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
it was light?
Yeah. I know.
It was like, oh.
I looked out the window and said, whoa,
wait a minute. And today I'm walking around squinting because there's just too much sun and I don't know where my sunglasses are.
We mushroom people don't know what that yellow thing in the sky is. Yeah. However, I heard a doctor on NPR saying that standard time is actually more natural to us.
It is.
Than daylight savings time. So let's pick one and
stick
with it.
And I don't really care which one, but mm-hmm. I would like to not switch.
Mm-hmm.
That's
It's disruptive.
It is disruptive.
I agree.
So, Emily, what have you been doing? What's been...
Oh, gosh.
You're a busy woman.
You know, I am. It's true. Aside from... Well, let's see. This past weekend, I hosted part of a kind of bachelorette party bridal shower for a friend of mine. Yeah. So, to talk about, you know, we were just discussing, like, what you all do here at The Klatch. Like, sit mm-hmm. around and make fun of each other and have a good time and laugh until you cry and then cry because there's things to cry about.
Yeah.
So, I am... my cup runneth over with all of that kind of thing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was good. It's a fun shout out to Amanda Long, who's getting married to another friend of mine, actually.
Wow.
And I'm actually officiating the wedding.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
I didn't know you did that. That's great.
Well, I haven't before. So,
now you're ordained.
I paid my $30 online, mm-hmm. you know, and here we are.
I love that. Where are they getting married?
North Carolina.
Oh,
yeah.
So you're going away.
To do a road trip.
Yes.
Well, not a road trip.
We're flying over there with a group of friends. So it should just be a fun vacation.
Oh, my
also.
Goodness. That'll be really fun. Yeah.
Which I think is much needed. But like Linda was mentioning, up at the food bank these days, there is nothing but exciting stuff going mm-hmm. on. And like you were mentioning, you know, change comes with challenges. But we've got this crew of people up there right now who are so kind of thoughtful and mm-hmm. Adaptive. And everybody's like ready to respond to need.
I was just
going to
say responsive.
Yeah.
They're very responsive.
Yeah. Like we're all very aware of the kind of the nonprofit sector mm-hmm. broadly mm-hmm. for years has been like, this is how we do things. And you kind of sit back on your haunches. And we just aren't that way mm-hmm. these days. It's mm-hmm. like a house full of systems engineers.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And a little exhausting, to be honest.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know?
And it's changed too.
Oh, yeah.
Which is hard. I mean, we think daylight savings change.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, let alone changing the way you do business and the structure
yep.
of your mm-hmm. organization. Yeah. Well, welcome. I'm just glad you're here.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
One thing we like to do is a little bit of a COVID check-in. And there's not much news really lately in COVID. I have personally two friends who mm-hmm. have it. I haven't seen them. I haven't been exposed to them. But they both got COVID within 3 or 4 days of each other. Mm-hmm. And neither of them had a symptom.
Yeah.
You know, so the asymptomatic thing is a problem now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of sneezy and runny nose and stuff lately. And I'm thinking, man, that's what they're talking about that people have.
You know, that's creepy.
So I tested and it's negative,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, how many times do you test?
Mm-hmm. Well, and those tests are getting expensive, too. It's
hard, I know. It's there's hard no more free tests.
Yeah, wasn't that just Monday? Or just it was just this week?
Fairly recently, yeah.
So anything COVID news at the food bank?
You know, it's something that we always kind of think and talk about. For example, just at staff meeting earlier this week that we have regularly on Mondays, mm-hmm. it was like... So let's see, one thing I mentioned before we got on air here is that we are planning on opening back up for in-person shopping mm-hmm. in the coming months. We're trying not to put a really hard start date on it in order to, you know, if we need to give ourselves a little more time, we will happily do that.
Yeah.
But talking about how we will welcome customers mm-hmm. back into the food bank after, what, 2-3 years
yes.
of doing this pretty, like, complex, very efficient order and kind of curbside pickup mm-hmm, process mm-hmm. and our home deliveries, of course, have skyrocketed. So we plan to maintain, you know, home delivery services as it stands. So anybody who wants it can have it. We'd like to let people come back in to shop for themselves. And then if somebody doesn't want home delivery, but doesn't want to go inside the food bank, we want to offer the option to put in an order and have volunteers pack it. And then mm-hmm. you just come pick it up like mm-hmm. you would at the grocery
store. At the grocery store.
You know?
Yeah.
So
Go ahead. Well,
I was going to say, relative to COVID, there's a lot of talk about masking policy.
Right. Do you have a policy yet on that?
You know, we have fluctuated back and forth between like having, it was easy when there was like the governor had a mandate. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because then you can just
you don't have a choice.
Yeah. But beyond that, crafting mandates and trying to think about how much we can actually control the spread of a disease versus what we can do to make each other feel comfortable mm-hmm. and like respect the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about that all the time. So where we've landed now, as far as masking, is that when we invite people back into the food bank to shop for themselves, it's looking like we'll require a mask mm-hmm. because we have so many different options if people don't want to wear them.
Yeah.
And as far as staff inside go, we for the past few years have had, you know, vaccine mandates mm-hmm. for staff and volunteers. Mm-hmm. So we're all kind of, it's really ambiguous, but it feels like the only way it can go to me to say, you know, if you feel like you need to wear a mask, we encourage you to, and they'll always be available. And if you feel like you don't, we're not going to mandate
it. That's fine, too.
You know?
Yeah. But you would mandate it for people shopping.
That's the way it's looking right now.
I think that's a really good idea.
And, you know, like we were talking mm-hmm. about before, the approach is that we'll be flexible. And if it, you know, if the world at large changes, mm-hmm. like it keeps doing mm-hmm. these days, then we will adapt as needed, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to bum you out like a stale policy just sitting on the shelf, you know?
Just because we've always done it that way.
Yeah, I hate stale policies. Yeah. They're stinky.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you're in the same position just about every other business is in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
is it optional? Is it mandated? Yeah. Is it choice? Is it this? Is it that?
Mm-hmm. And what an interesting point we're in, like at society, where it's like, does my personal freedom infringe upon your personal safety? It's like, maybe. And how do we balance that out when we're all trying to get along in the world? Mm-hmm.
You know, years ago, and I'm talking 20 years ago, I worked a lot in China, mm-hmm. in Hong Kong, and a bit in Beijing. And people were all wearing masks then.
For a long time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably because of the bad air.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they just got used to the idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
And I think they still do.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any COVID things, Susan?
No, I'm fine.
You're fine.
I haven't had it.
You look fine. Susan, do you have COVID?
Yeah, right. As I laugh here and spray my laughter across the studio.
Here, could we share that drink, please?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, I haven't had it. I've had all the shots. I've had a flu shot.
Me too.
I've had a pneumonia shot.
Did you get a shingle shot?
Yes.
Good.
Long time ago.
I didn't get one. I have to do
but,
that.
But, you know, I'm bulletproof.
Yeah, you are. You are.
You look it.
Well,
thank you,
so today is March 14th,
mm-hmm.
which is 3.14,
which
is Pi Day. And you know, here's a little aside. This is personal. Could we please make this about me?
Absolutely.
I have a little difficulty with Pi Day being on 3/14 because mm-hmm. the real Pi Day is January 23rd.
Okay.
That's the real Pi Day.
Are we talking Pi?
P-I-E Day.
Okay.
And that is should be a national holiday, but that's a PIE day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I've done it for years. I used to do pie auctions for, you know, nonprofit in where did I used to live? Oregon. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun. It was well received on Pi Day in January. So having said that, I'm going to go with 3.14 as mm-hmm. Pi Day. And being the mathematician that I am, I'm kind of excited to share with you what I know about it.
I didn't know you were a mathematician.
I'm not.
Me neither.
That was a joke. That was a big joke.
I'm scared of math.
You know, I am too. I'm scared of spreadsheets, as you know, Susan.
Yes.
So anyway, there were some good birthdays on Pi Day that actually fit right into kind of what Pi is about. So Albert Einstein was born today.
Oh, I didn't. How appropriate.
How appropriate. I know. And then do you know who Frank Borman is? He was an astronaut born in 1928, and he was best known for commanding the Apollo 8 mission. Mm-hmm. And he photographed the moon rising over the Earth. Mm. And that was, you know, he was quite well.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, right. And then Giovanni Schiaparelli, born March 14th, 1835. 19th century work gave us the greatest maps of their time of the planets.
Wow.
The solar system.
Planets, really?
Mercury, Venus, and most famously Mars. Huh. And the fourth one is a man named Jean Cernan, C-E-R-N-A-N, born in 1934, and at present, he's still with us. Oh, no, he isn't. He died in 2017. Sorry. He died. But he was the first human, the final and most recent human to set foot on the moon.
Wow.
As he re-entered the Apollo 17 lunar module after crewmate Harrison Schmitt. So you hear about the first one all the time, but I didn't know about the...
What are the chances that there are so many space-related astronomy-type people?
Doesn't it make you think of astrology?
Well, yeah, and it makes me think how sometimes the moon looks like a big pizza pie, you know, up in
Schiaparelli.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so I just thought that was really interesting as a added little tidbit for Pi Day that the mathematic geniuses were...
I
love it. That day.
I told my kids in Los Angeles that today was Pi Day, and mm-hmm. my son wrote back and said, "There's a 3.414% chance that we will get pi today."
Oh, well, that was good.
That's very low.
That was good. So we just learned to hear. This is for the listening audience. I'm pretty sure you don't have time, so I'll tell you all about it. Mm. that one of the churches here, just across the street, actually, mm-hmm. is giving away pies for Pi Day. And what does it say? Till 3 o'clock?
Two or three o'clock. My coworker,
sorry,
Duncan,
you missed it.
Left the office to get pie.
I would have had I known. Yeah, free pie. Well, the only reason I knew was I went into the bank, and Sandy said, "Well, we were just gifted a few pies." She said, "A few pies of different flavors." From a lady at the church, but she didn't know which church it was, so I couldn't hightail it over there to beg for mine.
Were they homemade pies?
Yeah, they're homemade. The ladies of the church made
really
homemade pies.
Good crust. Yeah. And, you know, my mother never admitted me to the Real Womanhood Club because I could never pull off a decent pie crust.
Oh.
Even though I could do hospital corners on the bed sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Not being able to do a pie crust just made me not a good woman.
It's
It sounds like you have to live on Vashon for 10 years before anyone will look you in the eye
it's
kind of
true.
Thing.
Yeah, it's
or
true.
On Pi Day, if you can't make a pie crust.
Well, you know, I can make a pie crust. But
I believe it.
It took a lot of practice. It's mm-hmm. it's not an easy thing to do. And people say, easy as pie. It's not.
Yeah, that's silly.
It's not. So, anyway, anything else about Pi Day?
You didn't bring any.
Making me hungry.
I know, I didn't bring any. You
can make a great crust.
I know. Well, maybe next time.
I will never let you forget.
I know you won't.
Linda, do you do the thing? I had a brief pie-making stint when I was in my early 20s. I mm-hmm. also lived in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And my boyfriend at the time, his mom taught me how to make pie crust.
Okay.
And I was like, this is great. It kind of fell to the wayside. But do you do the, you know, cut the butter and freeze it before mm-hmm. you lay it out mm-hmm. to get those
the little
flaky bits.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you know, recipes tell you to make it like fine sand kind of. I leave the lumps bigger than that and then they make bigger layers in the pie crust.
That's what Jane Robertson said too.
And also I use half lard.
Oh.
And that, you know, there's that savory beef thing in the crust along with the sweet butter and the sugar, and it just it's a perfect pie crust, I think.
I'm learning. Perhaps you could do a workshop on this.
Perhaps we could. Perhaps we could. I'd be happy to do that. That'd be fun. So, Emily, we normally have a thing called tidbits.
Mm-hmm.
And what it used to be was when we first started, I'm just an information junkie, and it comes in my head and it goes right out. And so I read all these things and I love all these things, and there are things I want to tell people about that I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of how it started. And then it sort of evolved into now it's more like, what are we thinking about? What are we doing, you know? Mm-hmm. And what Susan and I were talking about a few days ago was writing, because we're both writers and you're a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about different concepts and different formats and how we like to write and how we don't like to write. And so I was wondering if we could just talk about that for a little bit. Like, how do you write? Do you need a desk? Does it have to be, what kind of paper do you use? Do you prefer a Bic pen or a paper? What do you do? How does that work?
I have a favorite pen, and a dear friend of mine gifted me a pen from Ireland, but that broke. I'm not sure what that says about Ireland, but...
or you.
Yeah, or me, right? Yeah. True. But I like to have a favorite pen that's kind of like a gel pen or
like
something
loose.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's loose.
It feels like I'm painting the words onto paper.
Oh.
There's something about that tactile connection that brings out the creative side. And I usually do this only for my creative writing. For my freelance writing, for journalism and so forth, I compose at the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm writing something that I want to be creative, I like to start that way. And on a blank piece of paper, no lines, because I draw pictures too.
Do you? You doodle?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
I'm also a big doodler.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
So what do your doodles look like?
Oh, mostly geometric shapes.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, what's his name? With all the staircases that go in different
directions. Escher.
No, they're not that cool. I'm not saying I'm the equivalent of MC Escher.
Emily Escher.
Big reveal. I am MC Escher.
But that's tile.
Yeah.
That's sort of...
It's just something really calming about, you know, I'm one of those like in a meeting or in class or something. The doodling often probably looks like not paying attention, but I think it helps kind of like engage.
It kind of does,
I think. If you're doing this kind of repetitive thing. And then it makes for really good. I've gotten into making little like epoxy kind of like gems or like ornaments and little doodle sketches on paper laid in like an epoxy mold.
Oh.
Look really pretty.
Wow.
You can dangle them in your window.
Yeah.
I know.
You are a creative
person. You turn your just
person.
Like inane art into
inane art.
Somebody's thing around the house that they have to take care of. You know?
That's nice. Something else they have to dust.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
I know.
You know, as far as writing, though, I don't think I've written just creatively or like for fun in probably 15 years or something.
Well, you're business writing.
Yeah. You know. I do. The majority of writing I do these days is like grant writing, which absolutely happens at my computer, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh,
it turns out writing like a grant to the, you know, Department of Commerce doesn't work that well if you do it by hand and then transpose it.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, but I kind of appreciate, even outside of creative writing, the flow of just being very direct and making it like a memo, but really pithy, you know? There's something really satisfying about like, what is the point here? And just getting down
Stick
to it.
To the point.
Yeah.
And then afterwards you can put in a few personal.
You can fluff it up if you need to.
Yeah, you can fluff afterwards, but get your point covered.
Yeah.
Boy, that makes I bet you're good at that. That makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about analyzing the situation and identifying the nugget.
Yeah.
What is it we're really selling? It's kind of like branding.
What is the morsel? Exactly. Yeah.
And then you get
exactly
to put
like that.
The emotion into it.
Yeah.
After you've got your
I guess you almost have to, but I don't know how much emotion the Department of Commerce wants.
You know, it turns out I don't either, and it depends. Well, it depends, I think, on the person. I think what they really want is, like, proof that you are worthwhile and valid and that there's, like, community support for what you're working on.
Right, and by that word, I didn't mean, you know, your whole personal emotional story about why this is important to you, but something that clicks with the reader that says, oh, yeah, I get that. About my community needs
the human
or my
story.
The human piece of the grant writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has to be in there somehow.
Oh, yeah.
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 So, are you list makers?
I am, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I am. My favorite way to make a list, though, is to do a few things and then write them down and cross
and them
off immediately. You're like, oh, look how accomplished I am.
I love that. That's fabulous.
The well, instant gratification
yeah.
mode.
You can call it cheating or you can call it just productive, you know?
Well, you know, I have been recently, I have been forever downsizing. It never stops. Mm-hmm. And I'm organizing. And my friends roll their eyes like, oh, really? Because I'm totally unorganized. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly trying to organize. Well, what I've decided is I keep finding all these grocery lists or menu plans or guest lists mm-hmm. or things like that. And what happened over the last 6 months or so when I'm cleaning out old purses and old drawers and files and finding all these lists of things that... Like there's a list of grocery items that I have to get. And then on the side of the list is written this little thing about what we're going to do and what time it is and who's going to come. And then sometimes on the back of it are some quotes from the evening or the breakfast or whatever that somebody said. So what's happened to those, the first few I just chucked. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to recycle these, you know. Then I thought, wait a minute, there's a story here.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stories
so here. So those things now are in their own file.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe someday I'll go back and write about them. But it does kind of inspire me.
That is a really cool notion. I mean, I can imagine reading about the dinner party that ensued from that list.
From the menu.
Yeah.
I feel like I have seen, and this might have even been at like the... The Wild Mermaid down by the water. They
yes,
had like a collage of grocery yes. lists or people's lists.
And I think
and you get
they,
to wonder like who made this and what state of mind were they in?
Megan Hastings
yes.
put that together.
Yeah, I thought that was
really
fabulous.
Cool.
Yeah,
it was
quite memorable and it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To see the different handwriting and the different things that people wrote. And these were lists, I believe, that just got left at the Snapdragon.
Well, and see these are things too, like you're saying the handwriting.
Yeah.
This is something that's disappearing, is our personal handwriting and the list. And you see all those different kinds of...
Yeah, and doodles next to them.
And doodles, right.
And we often, up at the food bank, you know, we're often soliciting donations of paper bags because we send folks... We purchase a lot of grocery bags these days, but still, if we can get used ones in good condition, we'd prefer it. And it's really kind of fun when somebody's, like, a note or a personal shopping list or, you know, like, I leave all kinds of weird stuff in my grocery bags.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
to read through, like, oh, interesting.
And you know, there was one, someone else did an art exhibit of lists or notes that came out of library books.
Oh, yeah.
And really some very, and that was like a, maybe the Met did that. I don't know who did that, but it was a big museum. It was a huge exhibit and it was so interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it, but I read about it. And I just.
You know, I've often thought if I were a grocery clerk, a checker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would be making up stories
about
everybody
person.
Who comes through.
I can only imagine.
You know, what are you going to do tonight?
Yeah.
Don't you ever... And where have you been all day?
Yeah. I always feel a little bit judged when I go through the grocery line.
But
I just. Well, but not in a bad, you know, it's like, I feel like someone's probably speculating about what I'm buying and I'm happy for them for that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we're all out here getting our personal wares in a public space. Like,
and yes, there are some potato chips in there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's like there's some potato chips, some ice cream and some tampons. And that is what
and
it is.
It's
you know?
There. Yeah.
Right.
So would you like some?
Yeah.
Cause everybody would, you know, the people that are most judgmental about those things really want them.
Oh yeah.
I think.
Yeah. They're delicious.
Susan, you look like we need to do a sponsor
wow,
thing.
You read my face.
I did. So let's hear from our wonderful sponsors.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Escrow, Vashon's only independent escrow company providing comprehensive service for all types of real estate transactions since 1979. On the web at islandescrow.net.
VOV programming support is provided by Pandora's Box, Vashon Island's provider of quality pet foods at competitive prices. With over 100 years of combined knowledge and experience in pet care and pet nutrition, you'll find Pandora's Box on Vashon Highway, north of the main intersection.
Thank you, John Jeffcoat.
Was that John Jeffcoat?
That was John Jeffcoat.
Hi, John.
Really cool guy, filmmaker. He has a show called Island Eclectic.
Oh, yeah.
On Voice of Vashon, and he has great musical taste. He's a lot of fun. Good guy.
Oh, good. Hi, John. So where are we? Let's see. Oh, we're talking about writing. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the vehicle is the paper, kind of. And I love paper. I knew a man one time who was a paper salesman for International Paper. And so his accounts were all over the country. And he sold to printers and he sold to artists and he sold, you know, all different kinds of paper, which at the time I didn't really think about. Paper's paper, schmaper, you know, it's paper. And then I got an education about all the different kinds of paper there are. And the only thing I remember, one of the only things I remember, is that he had a product called Strathmore, which is pretty common. It's a linen finished, lovely, thick rag paper. And it's the paper that money is printed on. And what he told me, he was a salesman, and he said, so what I do is I write all my letters and all my everything on Strathmore, and I have my business cards on Strathmore, because subconsciously when people accept that letter, they're feeling money.
It's like a subconscious thing.
Isn't that funny? They're feeling, they don't know it. They don't, but there's a, and so then they might be more tempted to buy. Now that could be a schmarmy thing. You know, I don't know.
Salesman, I mean, it sounds like he was good at his job.
Yeah, I imagine he was.
That makes me think of two things, Linda. Primarily, have you watched The Office with Dunder Mifflin? They sell paper. Thinking of the hilarity that ensues in that show. But also, my mom is a paper lover. She is the kind of nerd who will go into a bookstore and just wants to smell the books. She's like the scent. It's probably the intersection of the ink, the fresh printed ink on the paper, and like the crisp. It's just a tactile.
And the old books.
Oh, yeah.
Because the old books have their own kind of smell.
They do.
Musk.
Mold.
Tobacco. You know, there's a paper store in Portland. I know there's one in Seattle, too, and I don't remember the name of it. But there's one in Portland that is called Oblation. It's a little tiny place, and they have the most exquisite papers you've ever seen. And whenever I was bored and lived in Portland, I found myself there. Looking at paper, and it's very expensive, maybe buying one or two sheets to write a special letter on or something. And they have one of those old-fashioned crank presses. And so they do letter press for people. They would custom design a card for you or something if you wanted to. But I love paper. And Susan brought up today something about Da Vinci.
Ah, yes. Da Vinci, but it's not about paper.
No, but what I have to say about it is paper. So,
what I have to say is nothing.
I have to say is paper. Okay,
so Da Vinci's paper?
Da Vinci's paper.
Okay.
Da Vinci used linen rags and had paper made out of that. And you know, the good papers are made from, they're cotton and linen and, they're made from rags. So I got in a, I got another rabbit hole. And I went, how do you make, how did he make his paper?
How did he make
his paper? Well, you take little pieces of linen and you cut tiny, tiny, with very sharp scissors, so there's no fraying. And you cut into the little tiny, tiny things. And then you boil them for a long time. You just boil them and boil them
and boil them.
Yeah. And then the modern rendition, I don't know what they did in Da Vinci's day, but in the modern rendition, you put it in the blender. And then you spread it out to dry, you know, and you've got handmade paper. Now that
you could do that at home.
You could do that at home. It wouldn't be like your typing paper.
Well, no.
It's, you know, I mean, you it'll have it ridges
our,
on
our
it.
Our Epson color printer at the food bank office. And
you could.
Just imagine that the clogging.
Especially
could clog it up.
I think you could. But, you know, they kids make paper in schools now for a little craft project. And I bet that's how they do it. But I was fascinated. You know, I just didn't know what kind of paper Da Vinci used. So
I love it.
Now I know what to do with my old T-shirts.
Well, I guess, you know. Da Vinci liked to use white paper, but sometimes he used blue. So most of his original work is on white. And do you want to talk about Da Vinci now?
Yes.
Okay. What do you want to say about him?
Well, I found an article that that I can no longer pull up, so I'm going to really wing it here. But
and
I
just
found
trust her, because her sources are always good.
Yeah, it was the New York Times, but that's another story. Anyway, apparently Da Vinci discovered gravity before Newton.
I just never heard of that.
Nobody talked about it.
We've been living a lie.
But, yes.
Yeah. Another York, one.
Someone, yes, someone found a Da Vinci doodle. That was illustrating the flow of water and the fall of probably not an apple, something else. And he was illustrating that. And musing, if you will, about how that happens. Oh, he was looking at the fall of water and the flight of birds.
Oh, that's right. It was flight of birds.
How does that work? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that, and one of the coolest things that I remember, and again, this is just going to be a paraphrase quote from the article, was that Da Vinci was neither a scientist, not just a scientist, not just an artist, but he was a full-blown, fully fulfilled man of the Renaissance time, loving the opportunity to explore.
And learn something new.
Yeah. An insatiable mind. Mm-hmm. And isn't that thrilling?
It really is. It really is. I have a little personal story about Leonardo, I can tell you.
You were close?
Yeah, we were good friends. And he has a great sense of humor.
I bet.
Was he good in bed? That's important.
Well, we never got that far. You know, just that felt kind of dead.
A little dry.
Anyway, so I, you know, Da Vinci lived the last 15 years of his life in Amboise, in the Loire Valley, in a castle, and.
In France. Who knew?
Well, he was invited by King Leonardo in 1515 to come there and live there and do his art there. You know, Leonardo didn't have a lot. Mm-hmm. He was pretty poor. And so the king liked his work and asked him to come. And he was at the service of the king, of course. But he also did a lot of his own personal things. And in the early 90s, I think it was, I was there in Amboise. Mm-hmm. And it's in the Loire Valley, and it's a beautiful old castle, kind of small. I mean, it's not like your big giant castles like Chenonceau or anything. But anyway, they have in the basement walls are covered with his drawings and the things that, helicopters and things that he.
No kidding.
I mean, things that you just are modern day that you can't even believe. And he would say that someday this and, you know. Anyway, his office or his studio is a big, long room, and it has hardwood floors and heavy drapes and dark wood and big, what do you call them, globes from all over the world that I don't know, I imagine him touching them and, you know.
And old ideas of the continents. And
yes,
and
the old
what countries
globes,
were where.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you can go tour this house and you can go through it, and of course every room is blocked off with a rope, and you don't go in that room, but you can stand there and look. Mm-hmm. In his studio, you can go, and the only thing that's roped off is his desk with his chair. Mm-hmm. And there was nobody in the museum when I was there.
But you and Leonardo.
Yeah, just the two of us. So.
Did you sit in his chair?
I stepped over the rope.
I could tell. I could feel it coming.
I did. I stepped over the rope and I sat in his chair, and it was like, oh my God. And my hands are on the table where his hands, it was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I probably lasted 30 seconds, maybe a minute, because it was, somebody's going to catch me. I shouldn't be doing this. This is terrible. Oh my God. But what a wonderful experience.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's my little story about.
I do
Mr.
believe
Da Vinci.
When you can touch things in museums that it is like touching the last person who put it down.
I do too, and I think
of course,
about
if everybody else is doing it, you're probably touching the last person who walked through.
But. Well, you are, but it goes back, you know.
Yeah.
I think about that with archaeology and those people that are digging up these wonderful, wonderful things, but that's a whole other story.
And they really are touching it.
They really,
the last
the first,
person who put it down. Yeah,
it was 50,000 years ago or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we finished with our tidbits and our little chatting, and I really want to learn more about what's going on with you, Emily, and what's happening at the food bank.
Yeah.
I know that need has increased. Mm-hmm. I know that people are still hungry, and I just kind of like to hear what you're thinking now these days about hunger on Bashan and how all that's going.
Well, that's a really good and huge question, I think. There's so many different ways to approach it. I know kind of leading up to this, you know, this engagement, you and I, Linda, were talking about the recent federal cuts to the SNAP program,
right.
formerly
yeah.
known
right.
as food stamps. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, we recently did a survey of customers just to get a sense of how much people are feeling that. And I didn't get a chance to look at that data before I came here today. Mm. But I guarantee you, just anecdotally, we've heard people who, like one person shared with us a household of two. The daughter, you know, was 18, maybe just about to leave the household, and they were getting like $250 a month, mm-hmm. and it got cut down to $25.
Yeah, wow. $25. That's not even a dollar a day.
I know. Yeah. And it's really, it's the shocking part is that, you know, the notion that people only needed those increases during COVID.
I know.
As if, you know, and food costs are like 16% higher mm-hmm. than they were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It just is, the logic is just so kind of lacking mm-hmm. and it's so inhumane.
What
you know?
Do you think the logic was behind that?
I think it's just like the federal government scrambling to figure out
well,
how
the
to
federal
manage.
Where that comes from, I can mm-hmm. tell you, is that it has not been upped, if you will, what's the word, increased since the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe in 1970, yeah. $27 or $32 was a substantial subsistence mm-hmm. money. I don't know. But it has not yeah. been revamped.
And, well, it's I believe it is operated by the Department of Agriculture. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they kind of have their own way of doing things.
There's a lot there. Yeah. It's also among kind of social programs. Food stamps are an entitlement program. So
right.
there's no cap. Like if somebody qualifies, they are obligated to, like the government owes you that money.
Right.
However, if there hasn't been enough allocated toward it, or if they're trying to, you know, pinch mm-hmm. and save because we need to spend billions of dollars on defense overseas or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Then, you know, oh, we're still giving it to millions of people, but now we're only giving this household of two $25 a month. You
so
know?
It's down to 1/10 of what people were getting. In
yeah.
During
yeah.
COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
right
we
now.
Expect to see, you know, an increase overall in mm-hmm. food bank customers. We did just that first week. So those reductions rather happened on March 1st. We did see about a 20% uptick in-person shopping that week.
Aww.
Although it's difficult to say if that's directly correlated to SNAP cuts, because that's also the time when VIP volunteers are up there giving away free pet food.
Oh, right.
So it's this like,
so there's a draw.
You know, yeah.
yeah.
Which is
yeah.
a really fun thing. So you want to be like, ah, oh, yes, this is exactly why. But you know, it's
well,
really
you'll
hard
know
to
more
speculate.
Next month.
Yeah.
You'll know
yeah,
more next
absolutely.
Month. Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see the, you know, the kind of qualitative data that comes back
mm-hmm.
from the survey that we
yeah,
did.
Yeah. I'd be really interested in seeing
yeah.
that too.
Yeah. And then more broadly, I guess what I haven't even talked about here is that, you know, during the whole pandemic, I feel like not even a silver lining, I don't want to frame it that way, but just the need increased so dramatically. Like I mm-hmm. mentioned, our home delivery, you know, demand went up 500%. Like
wow.
peak COVID, we were doing about 175 deliveries per week.
So is that, excuse me, is that 175 people?
Households.
Households.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we have an average household size of maybe 2.2 or something
okay.
like that.
Just
so,
like the national average.
I know. Isn't
2.2
it funny?
And 1.5
it turns
dogs.
Out Vashon is just a little microcosm
yeah.
of the rest of the
yeah.
world.
Yes. Thank you for confirming
that.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
yeah.
So the demand for home deliveries, of course, increased because people were, you know, worried about leaving their homes
sure.
and just like general
yeah.
anxiety. But we've found over the last few years that there are so many other kind of underlying reasons why people, like if our goal, which it is to increase food security broadly, then we have to offer
mm-hmm.
people multiple different choices
mm-hmm.
of how to get that food.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're saying like, you deserve food, but you have to do it this way.
Right.
And
uh-huh.
if it doesn't work for you, too bad. You
well,
know, it just
I
feels
read,
hypocritical.
I read something recently about, I don't know which state, there are a couple states, three, four states that mm-hmm. do this, but you're eligible for food stamps for 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you...
Then you have to drop off.
Then you have to drop off.
Mm-hmm.
It's
which,
like,
again,
what?
Is like the COVID thing. Like,
yeah.
we understand your funds aren't enough to stretch across all your needs for these 3 months. And then
mm-hmm.
we expect that you're going to pull yourself together.
In 3 months.
In 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know
yeah.
about anybody else, but... like finding a new job or like convincing
or
your boss to give you a wage,
right.
a wage increase
right.
takes time.
It takes
know,
time.
Yeah.
And
there's, mm-hmm. it's the old American pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of folks out there who never had any bootstraps.
Or like
can
their
I tell
bootstraps
you about
got cut
that?
Years ago.
Can
yeah.
I tell
yeah.
you about pull yourself up by your bootstraps? You know where that came from? Slavery.
Yeah.
Because it's what the plantation owner would say as his foot was planted mm-hmm. on a slave's chest. Well, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And if you think about it, you can't pick yourself up by your bootstraps.
Right, not under those circumstances.
I mean, how do you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? I don't know. That's a...
That's ugly.
That whole theory has me looking at this list of words that I'm not supposed to say because of the FCC. Mm-hmm, but yes. Were we not...
were we not?
If we were really just having coffee and
we would
speaking
say
our
those
minds,
words.
We would say those words.
We would have been saying all those words. Yeah.
We have said a few of those words, and the FCC hasn't noticed
they
lately.
They don't come knocking.
Not yet.
It does require for someone to hear report it, first of all, and then turn it in. Yeah. Turn us in.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't want to take that chance for VOV.
No, we don't. And really, it doesn't happen every show.
No.
Used to happen a lot when Heidi was here.
It sucks.
It's Heidi's fault.
That's right.
Yeah, so, you know, speaking of, or not speaking of Heidi, I have never even met Heidi, so I wouldn't.
Okay.
I was just going to kind of circle back and do one huge thing with the food bank that I haven't even mentioned yet. So, trying to think about how to paint the like broad brush strokes of what's been going on there over the past few years, you know, all those changes and increased demand that happened during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of constantly adapting. Like I mentioned, we're going to try to open back up for in-person shopping
right.
here coming up. And then a long time running conversation that's been going on is the food banks need to find a new location.
A new home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, the view of Mount Rainier up on Sunrise Ridge is gorgeous.
It is.
And it's a beautiful property, broadly speaking. But as evidenced by, you know, the health center leaving, which I assume we don't need to open that can of worms.
Let's not go there.
We'll just, no, I don't think we'll do that.
It's for a different 3 hours.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are reasons they listed or criteria for why it was like, this site's not appropriate. It's true across the board, you know? It's a lot of buildings that we don't feel like speak to the dignity that food bank customers deserve in getting groceries. Or in volunteers, like, coming to work up there. And that's just aside from, you know, general accessibility.
Yeah.
So our,
sure.
Yeah. I
sure.
mean, and you both know, like with Voice of Ash on the old studio up there.
Right.
If it snows, it's like impossible to get
too
up
bad.
The, it's like a quarter mile up a hill. The bus doesn't go up there.
Right. There's no way to use public transportation to get there under any kind of weather.
I happened to have broken my leg in early December and was for a little bit commuting. I moved up to Greenwood actually last year.
I knew that.
And I was commuting by bus, which I love. I love public transportation and find myself able to be more productive on the bus for some reason.
I love the bus.
It is bizarre.
Too.
But even just the hardest part of that long journey was getting off the bus at 210th and Vashon Highway and walking up to the food bank office.
You know, with
like the
your
last mile. Yeah, with a boot on. You're like, well, I'm glad it's not muddy or raining or snowing right now.
Yeah.
So aside from, you know, dignity, accessibility, and just general safety, we feel like the, you know, again, the criteria for why we need a new location are pretty valid and pretty strong.
So where are you at? And where are you in that process?
That is such a good question, Linda. I am 100% enveloped in it all the time.
Okay.
So we have had a long running relationship with the Methodist Church uptown, which is not the one who was giving away the pie.
I know.
I know. They do wonderful things, but they were not giving away pie today. So if you know that property that's just up the street, there's this beautiful sanctuary building right on the highway and a single story, what they call the education building, kind of kitty corner to it.
Oh,
for years, that building has been hosted like community groups and, you know, so like violin lessons. There was a lot of COVID vaccine work going on in there.
Oh, that
like
building.
A year ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that
I got
building.
My boosters there.
So in between or in the like armpit of those two buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a disrespectful
that's
way to
a
put
good
it.
Word.
You know.
Not a real selling point.
Intersection.
It's a very well tended to armpit of those two buildings that right now. Yeah. There's currently a playground that is, you know, older and underused. So the plan is for us to take down that playground and build a new 3,600 or 3,800 square food bank, square foot food bank right there. And then we're going to purchase the entire education building for food bank office space, but also like community collaborative space.
Wow.
So you probably both know on Vashon, there's a ton of nonprofits doing really good work.
Yes.
But partially because of our, you know, we don't have like a municipal government that has like a health and human services department. So that group of nonprofits are all beholden to fill in all these gaps and like really collaborate and work together to make sure everybody's, you know, not falling through the cracks. which is really difficult when you're running a business and trying to collaborate with other people running a business.
To make it all mesh and work together.
Yeah. So the goal is, of course, in that education building, we won't be able to, like, we're not going to have a multi-service center that will house all the nonprofits on the island, but we hope to be able to create like a social service hub where people can go and they have easy access to information and even like humans there, like our current community resource navigators who can help guide people where they need to go.
That is a fabulous idea.
The goal.
What's your timeline?
That is a great question. So we are working.
I'm just full of great questions.
No, Linda,
today.
You are nailing it. So let's see, walking back. And right now, in the grand scheme, we were talking about ambiguity around COVID, right? It turns out in the grand scheme of building things in King County, there's this giant black hole that is permitting. So on our timeline, we're working with some architects from Seattle right now called Graham Baba. They're doing really great work for us. Recently did the new Ballard Food Bank. And have designed a bunch of kind of food-centric markets, like some of the new PCCs in Seattle. So they've just really got they like inventory management and human, like people flow and, you know, just the confluence of like bringing the outdoors inside to make a comfortable space. We're just through the end of schematic design with this architect group. And the right now on the big fancy, you know, the architecture timelines, they have these tiny little words because they produced it in AutoCAD or whatever. And it's like, there's a little dot right at the bottom that says grand opening in September 2025.
Okay.
So in, from now until then, we have to get through, you know, honing in on the design of the new building. We're going to do some not really extravagant because it turns out it's a really well-built building, but some light touches like renovations to that education building. And then we have to go through permitting, which has been suggested could take anywhere from like 15 to 18 months or more. I heard recently from those guys that in the city of Seattle, it can for a commercial building can take like 2.5 years.
Well, do you have to wait till all the plans are final and everything's done before you apply?
That is also a really good question, Linda. So what I'm learning a lot very quickly with all this, you know, because it turns out I've never managed a, you know, a construction project.
As it turns out.
Yeah, I know. Apparently everybody else has. And I'm happy to say that I, for anyone who, why would Emily be managing that? I'm not. We're beholden to raise the money to pay professionals to do that, I feel really good about. But there's, I think we can do like a phased permitting thing. And there's a bunch of different reasons, like variables about why we would do that or not. And we're not quite there yet. But there is a chance like we can put in for this level of permits while we're still developing X, Y, and Z, and then hope to get our foot in the door. There's also the chance if anyone listening has a cousin who works for the county permitting department.
Sometimes that
free
helps.
Free groceries for the rest of your life.
Or maybe, or maybe talk to Joe McDermott. I don't know if he would.
He's been a friend of the food bank for a long time. I do wonder, we just saw recently that he's not running for re-election. But, you know, Joe, if you're listening, if you want to do us a solid before you get out of there.
Yeah, you got nothing to lose.
Got my phone number.
Help us.
I know. And, you know, we do have some really good lines on, we're working with some consultants to craft a really like robust capital campaign. So going for state funding, actually just tonight we'll be working on a special request through Pramila Jayapal's office because their like special allocations are going in right now. So, you know, it's we're trying to run the full gamut.
This is really huge. It's just so big and very exciting.
It is. It is exciting.
I just would like to say this is, I'm not pandering, but I just would like to say I'm so glad you're there.
Thank you, Linda.
System has changed since you took over, and the people have changed. The quality has changed. Everything's changed, and it's really, really something to be proud of. Emily.
Well, thank you.
Well, I want to add to that because I agree with you. And when you came back, I mean, I was there when
you
went away.
I was too.
And when you came back, I thought, that is the perfect person.
It is.
Emily is the perfect person to be there. And look what you're managing to pull off. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, well, you are making me blush, both of you guys. I think it was just convenient that I had just gotten out of grad school for like public administration with the whole, aside from all the nitty gritty of that, the whole thing is like like managing or like governing through ambiguity. I was like, what a better time.
Well, that sounds like that's a perfect tagline.
Like I was on the job for what, 5.5 months when the COVID hit.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, now what?
Bam.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the fact that you don't live on the island disturbs me because often what happens is we see great people like you, do great things for us, then you move off the island and somebody out there grabs you.
You know, I will say I'm definitely kind of connected to this place.
You're a Vashon girl. Yeah.
Somebody asked me recently why I moved off the island, not to make it about me, but it was, talk about COVID. I broke the COVID rules. I'm not going to get too personal here, but I met someone during COVID and you know, you weren't supposed to do that.
Right.
I was like, whatever. So I live with him up in Greenwood these days and his adorable 9-year-old son who goes to Greenwood Elementary, three blocks up the street.
That's wonderful.
It's a good, it's a good thing. And I do feel like, especially with all the really public facing place, the food bank is going right now. It's kind of, I'm kind of a mover, you know, I like just moving throughout the world, but it's also, I think, really good for me to be able to, step away and get better perspective, both about Seattle and about Vashon, you know?
Good point.
Because it's easy out here to get, you know.
It is. Yeah. To be navel gazing.
It is.
To get into
is.
The bubble and believe that the rest of the world is really like this.
Yeah.
And it isn't.
I think it's a good, it makes me appreciate both places more, kind of like existing in both.
I think you have the best of both worlds, really.
Yeah.
You do.
And while we have wonderful restaurants on Vashon, there's also so many in Seattle.
I know. You get, it's
and
a wider choice.
I bet you can walk to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I'd really
a good
like
thing.
To be able to do
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I would like to move us a little bit toward talking about the other side of abundance, and that would be food waste.
Yes.
I'd like to talk about that a little bit because I've been reading about it, and I've read that it's the methane gases from the food that we throw away offer us a lot of environmental damage. You know, people are learning now about food waste.
I'm glad.
What happens at the food bank when things go bad?
That's a really good question. We talk a lot with the Zero Waste Vashon folks about
this. I was going to ask
because they're very innovative. Nod to Steve Bergman, who every time I see him, he's like, what do you guys, have you guys figured out how to quantify the waste out of the food bank yet? And the answer is always no, like we're just not quite there.
How many carrots was that?
I wish we could. I love data. I wish I could tell you like how many pounds go out the back door. We know how many come in, and that's kind of how we talk about our impact and like the services. Like we move about 450 to 600,000 pounds of food throughout the course of the year, depending on millions of things. But our actual like quantity of food waste is hard to say, but I can tell you that the amount that just like goes in a dumpster or does not find a like tertiary, like if the food bank is the end of the human food loop. We move it along to its next life, which often is reliant on our relationships with farmers
and pigs and chickens and
so we do Ivan Wise Ivan comes up and picks up up our food waste and feeds them to his beautiful beautiful pigs that
I was talking with Hetty Anderson today who runs the Sugar Shack and I asked her kind of what she does because there's a little food waste there. She said, oh, we don't really have much. She said, I have my pig bucket right here and then my goats get some of the other stuff and then she has a farm with a big compost thing, so it all goes out there. But I think everybody on Vashon's trying really hard. I really do. One of the statistics that I read from Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations says that 8-10% of global greenhouse gas emissions are from food waste.
Wow, that's lower than I would have thought. Yeah,
I a few years ago heard a stat that was like, and this is really more at the industrial level or like the production level, but that's somewhere between 30-40% of food produced nationally gets wasted, like does not end up on the human table.
One statistic that I really do want to quote is from the EPA. And the EPA, that estimates that food waste emissions from farm to fork to landfill are the equivalent to that of 72 coal-burning power plants.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that, yeah. What?
Yeah.
What? So let's talk about, I mean, that's all bad.
How do we prevent
it? What do we do? What do we as human beings do? And I think like Hetty talked about what she's doing and you've talked about what you're doing. I live in an apartment, so I don't compost.
But Zero Waste Vashon is trying to build a community
yes. Yeah. And
composting
I want that badly.
Yeah. County funding for that, right?
You know, I used to have a compost pile just in the backyard, and it wasn't a tub, and it wasn't fancy. It was a hole in the ground, and I threw everything in there and turned it around, and then pretty soon you get fabulous.
We compost everything at our house.
I know you do,
but we've got two
big ones,
big bins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, we're running out of time, but the other thing that I wanted to say to our listeners mostly is there are many innovative ways of cooking those foods that you think, I don't think I'm going to keep this much. Like the soft-sided apple or the apple that's a little bit mushy. You know, you can always make applesauce or something like that. Mm-hmm. I read an article about a woman trying to budget. You know, she's running out of money and she doesn't have enough food, and she was in the refrigerator and she loves radishes, but she said she only eats like 3 or 4 of them, and then they kind of sit in there and get withered. You know how radishes get. So she roasted them like she would have done had they been fresh and put them in a quiche with some other vegetables that were on the turn. And she said it was just delicious. And one thing that I would like to encourage people to think about is that the food that's going to go to waste, that you're going to throw in your garbage can or whatever, I think is calling on you to use your creative juices. What can we do with this food? I can add it to that. I can freeze this and freeze the carrot peelings and make some stock. I just think it's really important that people start thinking about that. And I have one thing I need to say. I'm going to give a shout out to Tom Conway, because Tom does this wonderful thing with his orange peelings that, you know, we throw the orange peelings away most of the time.
Yeah.
So what he does is he sections the peeling. You take all the pith off, take all that white stuff off, and then sort of julienne into tiny little strips, these orange peels. Any kind of orange, they can all, you know, they don't experience any separation anxiety. They can all be together. And then you put a cup of water and a cup of sugar in a little saucepan and put it on the back of the stove and just let it simmer for a while and then put the lid on it and forget about it. Mm-hmm. Then tomorrow you're going to have another orange. You do the same thing, throw it in there. And you just keep it on the stove and you do that. And then when you have enough, you know, 4 or 5 oranges probably, you put it in a little pint jar. Put it in your fridge and it will keep forever. Mm-hmm. And he chops those little tiny julienne things, puts them in muffins. It puts them in pancakes. Ah, he puts them in cakes. They're in tea. It's really lovely to do that.
I love all these ideas. These are wonderful ideas for people who cook, people who spend time in the kitchen. What about the people who have 3 kids in school and 2 jobs, and they don't have time to julienne the orange peel?
Well, they really do. I mean, they really do. I think I know people like that. And when they have to, people that are working full time and they've got 2 kids, or, you know, you just have to make the time. Yes, it's time consuming. But you're not a cook, Susan. You don't enjoy it.
Well, no, I do.
Oh, you do?
I do, but I don't do it that much because I don't have a lot of time, and I have a husband who really likes to
cook.
Yeah,
your husband likes to cook, too. Well, I guess that's a good question. I would also like to say that there are many, many brand new cookbooks out there on how to cook old food.
Well, that I think is a great idea. What I was just thinking is we need a website that has a list of things you can do with fading food or things to do to prevent throwing food away.
What a great
idea.
First
thing would be, start with a grocery list every time you go to the grocery store and don't buy any more than you need. Right. Don't go hungry, but don't go in there hungry.
I've kind of taken to do that. I'm doing my shopping maybe every 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then I just buy what I'm in the mood for at that point, if I can afford it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes you're in the grocery store and you go, oh yeah, I need that. And you put it in the bag, and I need that. And you put it in the bag, and then you get home and it's in the pantry for 6 months.
You know? And that, you know, that's kind of the difference between the European style.
Right. Mm-hmm. It is.
And the American style. Americans, we feel like we should stock up.
Yeah.
Europeans do that.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the market every day to shop for what they're going to eat today. And I know we're down to 1 minute left.
I'm going to do some research. I promise listeners and promise you, I'm going to do some research on how, what if I don't cook? What if I don't have time? Mm-hmm. What can I do?
How not to waste.
And we'll
do that. I was going to say also, isn't it nice that we can talk both about like julienning oranges to save for your muffins, but then also to for the people who don't maybe choose not to,
mm-hmm.
if we had like a community compost system
right.
where you can walk either path and still feel like you're not doing the world
you're
a disservice, you know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's
Emily, is there anything in 27 seconds you want to say?
If you feel like you could use some help with your grocery bills, come use the food bank.
Yes.
And if you've got any disposable income you're looking to get rid of, also come find me.
That's the other thing I should say is the food bank has absolutely no, there's no judgment. There's no, you just come and go shopping like you're going to the grocery store.
I'm glad, yeah. And that's
thank
been
you,
design.
Listeners, for listening.
Thank you, Linda and Susan.
We love you all. And thank you, Emily, for coming. Uh-huh. It was great fun having you. And I hope that we can have you again for a follow-up. Pretty soon we'll find out how your plans are going with,
oh, absolutely.
With the new business building and warehouse. That's exciting.
It is.
Thank you, Wendy.
Yeah.
Wendy? Did I call, just call you Wendy?
Call me Wendy.
Thank you, Emily.